Praise the Lord, everyone. You're probably wondering what's in the box. Who said yeah? We'll get to that later. Tonight is it'll be a little different, but that's okay. You can be seated, please. I'll be using number 8 later. Now, the question was, what do you see in the box? What do you think is in the box? What in your mind do you think of when you see the box? We see and perceive things based on a lot of things. Our senses, our emotions, past experiences, our mood, circumstances, our environment. I mean, the list goes on. We perceive and look at things based on all of those things. Prior to Samuel choosing David as a king, he interviewed basically all of his brothers. And one by one, God said, nope, nope. How about the next one? He came to one of David's brothers, Eliab, and he said, surely the Lord's anointed is before him. Now, why did he think that? Because of his appearance. He looked taller. He was maybe more handsome. And he thought, yep, he's the one. But in 1 Samuel 16:7, it says, But the Lord said unto Samuel, look not on his countenance or on the height of his stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord seeth not as man seeth. For man looketh on the outward appearance, but the Lord looketh on the heart. So, how does that pertain to us tonight? That says a lot in that God doesn't look at the outward appearance. He looks at the heart. He looks at what's inside. So that could be a lesson right there of how we perceive other people, how we look at other people, how we judge other people, how we set them in that little box, if you will, of who we think they are, what their motives are, just by looking at them. You know, the old saying, don't judge a book by its cover. So now that's how we perceive other people. Let's bring it home. This is what I want to focus on tonight, is how we perceive ourselves. Not other people, but let's turn this to a lesson on how we perceive ourselves. How we look at ourselves versus how God looks at us. Perception is very, very deceiving. We may view ourselves as a failure, unsuccessful, unable to overcome, etc. The list goes on, fill in the blank. What does God see? We may say, but God, I can't because of this or that. I can't because I can't talk. I can't because I have this inability. I have this flaw. I have these habits. I have this nature. I have this sin. I have, you fill in the blank, I have this. But what does God see? Perception is defined as a way of regarding, understanding, or interpreting something, or a mental impression. So an impression that we have on ourselves, do you think that's accurate? It could be. Some aspects may be. But what I want to focus on is the perception that we have of ourselves that are negative. I can't do this, God, because of this. God is saying to us, And this is the title of my message: Do You See What I See? Do you see the qualities that I see in you? The same applies how we view ourselves. It's based on senses, emotions, past experiences, moods, circumstances, environment. Do you see what I see? There have been occasions where I've spoke with people that have been down, that have been frustrated, and they list some of the qualities or shortcomings that they have. And I just feel like stopping them and saying, wait, don't you see what I see? Are you seeing the same person? Are you talking about the same person? You're talking about yourself or someone else, a friend of yours? Because I see somebody totally different. I see the good in you. Let's look at a few examples. There's some examples in the Bible of people that have struggled, or they most likely have struggled. Maybe the Bible doesn't record it, but the first one I'd like to talk about is Hagar, the servant of Abraham and Sarah. In Genesis 16, it's recorded that Hagar married Abraham because they didn't have the promised child yet. So they jumped ahead of God's plan. Sarah said, have a child with Abraham. So they were married, and she conceived. And once Sarah found out, she mistreated her very badly, to the point where Hagar fled. Hagar fled her situation and seemingly had every right to. I would have. I mean, she probably treated her terrible, embarrassed her. At times, we ourselves may want to flee our circumstances, flee the hospital with bad news, flee the bank when they tell us we have no money, flee a counseling session not knowing how the pieces are going to be put back together, maybe fleeing our job from the overwhelming stress and circumstances and demands. We want to flee anything that we are not comfortable with. I am right there. The path of least resistance. However, the angel told Hagar to return to Sarah and submit yourself to her. Did I read that right? Submit yourself to her. Not only just go back to your difficult situation, yet submit to it. Does that sound crazy? God was saying, go back to your situation that you're uncomfortable with, because I see something in you that you don't. Hagar maybe thought, I can't live up to their expectations. I can't fulfill what they want me to do. But it was a difficult situation. She was told, go back. Because God was saying, go through your trial, because I know that you can do it, and I know the outcome. He said he would multiply her seed exceedingly. He was confident Hagar could do it. Jesus puts us sometimes in circumstances that we would love to flee. He was confident in Hagar that she could do it, and he encouraged her. Hagar was encouraged to go through her trial despite her self-awareness. God is saying, I know you can do it, and I know the outcome. Sometimes we don't see the whole picture. A lot of times we don't see the whole picture. You know, God gives us just a tidbit, and then we have to act on that. And that's faith. That's trusting. So Hagar saw herself as inferior. God saw her value and would multiply her descendants exceedingly. Deuteronomy 31:6 says, be strong and of good courage. Fear not, nor be afraid of them. For the Lord thy God, he it is that doth go with thee. He will not fail thee nor forsake thee. So a God that wouldn't fail us or forsake us, he's going with us. He wouldn't say that unless he sees something inside of us, some self-worth, some value, some potential, some victory in us. Otherwise, he wouldn't have said that. What about the Samaritan woman at the well? John 4 records this. The Samaritans were not to associate with the Jews. Pretty plain and simple. She reminded Jesus when he was with her, I'm not supposed to be with you. She had five husbands, and now she was rooming with another man. But Jesus looked beyond that. Maybe everyone else in that time looked at her, looked down on her, but not Jesus. Jesus saw something in her that was of a self-worth and value. Jesus defied all preconceived ideas, even the law, and the status quo misconceptions. She saw failure, but Jesus saw potential. Joshua 1 and 9, it says, have not I commanded thee, be strong and of good courage, be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed, for the Lord thy God is with thee whithersoever thou goest. Again, Jesus is always going to be there, no matter what we look like. Instances, like I said before, where people felt like blank, you know, you fill in the blank. I saw it. You know, what about our children? When Maureen and I discuss our children, it's not, oh yeah, you know, here's a list of all their failures and their faults and what they did wrong and the dates and and look at my list, you know, I've got a few more I can add. But it's never that way. It's as if we've forgotten things that have happened. And things happen, don't get me wrong, but we address it, we move on. But our conversation is based on, hey, did you see the note Rochelle wrote? Or did you hear how Leah sent an email to her teacher who has a sick relative in the hospital saying, we're going to pray for you? I mean, that's all on their own. And so our focus and our conversation is based around those positive things, those good qualities. You know, we, to be honest, and our kids are near perfect, but I told Leah I would not embarrass her. So I hope that didn't embarrass you. If it did, oh well. Well, what was I saying? Oh yeah, our kids are perfect, that's right. But we focus on the good qualities, the things that interest us and just, you know, brighten our day. And it's enjoyable doing that. It's enjoyable, you know, picking down the list or finding, you know, sharing. Sometimes Leah will say something to Maureen and maybe not me. So we'll share, hey, did you hear what happened at school? Did you hear this or that? That is such a joy for us. So I wonder if Jesus looks at us the same way. You know, he doesn't list all the bad qualities of, wow, you know, 10 years ago, remember when Sister So-and-so did that? Or remember when Art did that the other day? Or, you know, I mean, sin is sin. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that Jesus overlooks and, you know, sweeps it under the carpet. You know, but it's quick and easy. All we have to do, Jesus says, is repent and move on. You know, and ask him for help. Help me not to do that again. Help me not to sin. What about another example? What about the woman caught in adultery? John chapter 8 covers this. Because of her actions, she thought of herself as dead. Again, Jesus had compassion and saw something about her that no one else did. God doesn't overlook sin, like I said. He didn't overlook her sin because he said, go and sin no more. So he's not saying, yeah, just go and do whatever you want. You're good. Go and sin no more. She saw defiant. She didn't have that self-control. But Jesus saw a conqueror. What about Hannah in 1 Samuel chapter 1? She was barren. She was childless. She couldn't have children. Does that sound familiar to anybody here? But Hannah sought God with all of her heart and had Samuel, a great prophet used by God. Hannah saw defeat in her infertility. But God saw completeness. A family being complete with a child they so desired. She probably saw in herself, I don't know, inadequate. A lot of things go through your mind. As Maureen and I went through that exact same thing for 14 years, wondering, what is this all about? But completeness, that's what Jesus is all about. Now, men, don't feel left out. I know we focused a lot so far on our examples with women, but there's plenty of examples in the Bible about men as well. Gideon, Judges chapter 6. This is such a fascinating story. The Midianites brought Israel to poverty. They stole, they destroyed. The people cried out to God asking for help. So Gideon had an angel appear to him and said, "The Lord is with thee, thou mighty man of valor." Now, what if you would have heard that right from God, or right from an angel, "Thou mighty man of valor"? Would you be set for the rest of your life, or for maybe a battle that you're facing, maybe a struggle, maybe a situation that you can't handle, you don't know what to do, you don't know where to go? What if in that circumstance, God came up to you and said, "I'm with you, you mighty man of valor"? Would you be done and victorious right like that? That's a difficult one, because Gideon, it's amazing what he went through. I want to read this. I'll go a little quickly just for the sake of time, but the angel of the Lord appeared unto him, saying, "The Lord is with thee, thou mighty man of valor." Gideon didn't feel very mighty, obviously, because he questioned God. So then God goes back, Judges 6:13, and Gideon said unto him, "O my Lord, if the Lord be with us, why then is all this befallen us? And where be all his miracles, which our fathers told us, saying, did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt? And now the Lord hath forsaken us and delivered us into the hands of the Midianites." So he's questioning. Well, God comes to him a second time. He encouraged Gideon, saying in Judges 6:14, "And the Lord looked upon him and said, go in this thy might, and thou shalt save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have not I sent thee?" Well, Gideon questions again, saying, "Well, I'm poor, I can't go, and I'm ranked least in my family. So surely that disqualifies me right there." Judges 6:15, "And he said unto him, O my Lord, wherewith shall I save Israel? Behold, my family is poor, and I am the least in my father's house." God speaks to him a third time. He said in Judges 6:16, "And the Lord said unto him, surely I will be with thee, and thou shalt smite the Midianites as one man." Gideon then asked for a sign. If the angel would consume the meat in unleavened cakes, which the angel did, then he saw God face to face. And he said unto him, "If now I have found grace in thy sight, then show me a sign that thou talkest with me." So then God speaks to him a fourth time. And the Lord said in Judges 6:23, "And the Lord said unto him, peace be unto thee, fear not, thou shalt not die." So how many times, Gideon, how many times do you have to be reminded? Do you have to be encouraged? What do you see in yourself that's holding you back? God obviously told him right off the bat, you're a man of valor. You're going to win. You know, I've given them into your hands. Unishanatai. Okay, Gideon then built an altar and worshiped God. This was prior to his victory. So that was an important thing. Very important. Judges 6:24. Then Gideon built an altar unto the Lord and called it Jehovah Shalom. Thank you. Boy. This was the most important part. Then Gideon questioned again and said, I'm going to put a fleece before you. If the dew on the fleece only is in the morning, then I'll be good. Well, that happened. God did that. God fulfilled it. Then he said, well, wait a minute. I'm going to lay another fleece out. If the dew is all around the fleece and the fleece is dry, then we're good. So he did that. So are you seeing these mental gymnastics and these inadequacies that was in Gideon? So then God spoke to him a fifth time, saying that God would deliver the Midianites into his hand. But if you still have fear, go listen to the enemy. Go near their camp and listen to them. So he did. He peeked up and he listened to what the enemy was saying. So finally, do you think it's over? So God encouraged Gideon at least, it's recorded, five times. He consumed a sacrifice and he confirmed a fleece twice. So do you think it's over? God sees us as victorious conquerors and overcomers. Do we see that in ourselves? Don't dwell on negative thoughts, our faults, our mistakes. Move on. We need to see the accomplishments, good deeds, thoughtfulness. We need to see what God sees. Okay, back to the story of Gideon. You want to see how this ends? Gideon finally convinced he would be victorious, because he had 32,000 men that were with him. 32,000. Well, actually, that got whittled down, remember? 22,000 left because they were scared. So they went home right away. Then 9,700 bowed down to drink, and they were excluded. So 300 people remained to fight the Midianites. They were successful. But look at all that Gideon went through to get to that point. You know, if he would have just believed and trusted that, okay, God, if you say I'm victorious, if you say the Midianites are mine, that I'm going to be victorious, I'm not going to die, let's go. You know, what about the spies that went into the Promised Land? I never understood that. If God told you this is your land, well, then why would you send in spies? And then when they came back, they had a negative report, except two. Why would you believe them? Well, God said this, and you're saying this. Okay, so we're grasshoppers. Grasshoppers can fight. Right? So Gideon saw his insecurities, but God saw bravery. Okay, just a few more examples. Elisha and his servant. 2 Kings 6:15. And when the servant of the man of God was risen early and gone forth, behold, an host compassed the city both with horses and chariots. And his servant said unto him, alas, my master, how shall we do? 2 Kings 6:16, and he answered, fear not, for they that be with us are more than they that be with them. Well, how did he know that? The servant saw something in him that was scared. He saw the enemy. There's things that may come in our lives that we may think, it's overwhelming. I'm scared. I don't know what to do. I don't know where to turn. What do we do? Well, listen to somebody that can encourage you. 2 Kings 6:17, and Elisha prayed and said, Lord, I pray thee, open his eyes that he may see. And the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire round about Elisha. The servant saw weakness, but God saw strength. Zephaniah 3:17, it says, the Lord thy God in the midst of thee is mighty. He will save. He will rejoice over thee with joy. He will rest in his love. He will joy, and that word means to spin around, rejoice, or delight. So he will joy over thee with singing. What about Zacchaeus? We can't end this lesson without talking about Zacchaeus. The tax collector that everyone hated. In Luke chapter 19, now Jesus saw something in him. I don't know what he saw. Not really sure. If I was in that time frame, I read did a little research, and he was really hated by everyone in that area. So what do you see in someone like that? Zacchaeus, though, had a desire to come down and see and be with Jesus. So Jesus saw that desire. Zacchaeus in himself saw dishonesty because he was dishonest as a tax collector, but Jesus saw restoration in a short little guy. No matter what the negative is that we see in ourselves, God sees, and here are the main ones from each of those examples. He sees value, potential, conquerors, completeness, bravery, strength, and restoration. He sees all that in us. Now, what's in the box? I opened the drapes because last time Pastor Portman asked me to preach, someone on their own free will wanted to be baptized. Do you remember who that was? Our daughter, Rochelle. So it's so fitting that I opened the drapes, because I'm preaching, and it had nothing to do with my preaching. She had a desire to be baptized. She went up to Pastor Portman and said, can I be baptized? And the normal, typical question, well, do you know why? And she knew why. So I am so honored. I hope this would someday come true, but I'm still praying, and I don't want to embarrass anybody, but I'm so honored to have my parents sitting in the back. So I'm just leaving that open just in case, you know. If anyone feels the need to be baptized, we are ready. Right, Pastor Portman? Is this on? Okay. Maybe I'll turn my hearing aid up. Well, what's in the box? Leah, do you want to come up and help? Just kidding. Where's Kyle? Where'd Kyle go? I thought you were going to stand up here and help me. I'm just kidding. All right, what's in the box? Anybody have any ideas? Now, if you know, and I know there's a few people here that know, please don't say. Anybody have any ideas? Do you want to guess? Frosted Flakes? Frosted Flakes. Now, from the looks of this box, do you think there would be anything worthwhile in this box? At least if it was shipped like that, I'd probably think right away, wow, if it was valuable, it's not anymore because it's probably broke. So pardon? I don't know. To me, if I saw this on my porch, I'd probably think, it's the wrong house, so I'd put it on my neighbor's porch. But out of curiosity, the type of curious person I am, I think, well, even if it was labeled theirs, I'd probably open it and see. Oh, what are the neighbors getting now, You know, the Bible says that God is no respecter of persons. He doesn't care what you look like, how much you weigh, if you're educated, not. It doesn't matter to him. He could care less. Sometimes, you know, it matters to us, which it shouldn't be. You know, why do we as humans do that? That's the way we are. That's the way we're wired. But there's times that I've prayed, you know, God, help me walk through life seeing other people as you see them. As potential souls. People that are going to either end up in heaven or hell. And by looking at somebody, you don't know. We have no idea. We have no clue. My dad would always say, growing up, and this is one of those parent sayings that you just loved hearing growing up, that there was a sense of sarcasm in that, but he would say, you know, when I would complain, obviously he would say this, you know, Arthur, no matter how bad you have it, someone else has it worse off. Well, the same goes true, you know, no matter how good you have it, there's always somebody that has it better than you. So what do you do? What's the answer? I don't know where that came from, but you know what I mean. We can't compare. Oh, I know what I was going to say. We can't compare ourselves with other people. We can't look at someone else and say, wow, they've got a new car, they've got a new house, they've got new shoes, whatever, a new job. You know, it's so easy for us to do that, look at it. Other situations, other circumstances, other people, and wish we were there. But you know, that doesn't do a thing for us. What that does is it consumes our mind and our time and our worry on something that we have no control over. No control. So why worry about it? Leah said one time, when you go through something, if you worry, you suffer twice. So it's kind of the same thing. If you worry about it, you're suffering twice. One is seeing somebody with a nicer car, and then the other is worrying about it. But what's in the box?
keep in mind this. What, did I miss something? Do you want to share that with everyone? Now keep in mind, this is a representation of sometimes how we can feel and we can view ourselves as beat up, torn, you know, just holes in it, trying to be fixed up. That's maybe how sometimes we can feel. But you know what God sees? I'll show you. Let's not look at that. We don't have to dwell on this. We don't have to think about this. This is not worth our time. This is something of worth. This is something that says to God, I see potential in you. I see value. I see worth. I see capacity. If the musicians would come, I'd like to just wrap this up and encourage anybody that is feeling like that to remember, this is really how God sees you. This is how God sees us. There was a time, I think it was maybe a Saturday morning prayer, that it was a time I was thinking, wow, you know, I had that bad attitude, or I had this wrong, I did this, or, and I started out my prayer with God, I don't feel worthy to be in your presence. I don't feel worthy because of, and he stopped and said, well, if you could only see what I see. And so I argued with him a little bit, and I said, oh, really? Well, I'd sure love to see what you see. I wasn't that arrogant, don't get me wrong. I'm just doing that for dramatic effect, so you guys will pay attention. I said, really? This is what I see. And I started listing them off again. He goes, no, this is what I see. And so it was a little, you know, dialogue going back and forth of arguing with God. And it really surprised me. It really touched me. And it's just too bad we can't really see what God sees. Because of those circumstances, because of those past failures, because of those habits and things that, you know, that maybe life just throws you a curveball and you reacted and it was wrong, or, you know, you think back. There's always something I could think back and wish, wow, I wish I would have handled that different. I wish I would have done something different. But you know, it's so funny because God looks past that. He looks past it. And he goes into the package and says, well, this is what I see. This is what I see. There's value here. If you could stand with me, I'd like to open the altar and feel free to come and either put money in this or I'm sorry, did I say that? That's probably on video too. But make your way up and just talk to God and let him know that you want to view this like he does. You are all valuable. You're precious. You have potential. Every one of you.